When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
Running a business is hard enough. Don't make it harder with a dozen apps that don't talk to each other. One for sales, another for inventory, a separate one for accounting. That's software overload. Odoo is the all-in-one platform that replaces them all. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, HR. Fully integrated, easy to use, and built to grow with your business. Thousands have already made the switch. Why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's odoo.com.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on Football Full Circle. It's the Sports Grid Radio Network and all across everything you need live right here on FFC. He is Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. It is the Tuesday, Scott, following the conclusion of week number 3 of the NFL regular season. For the second consecutive Monday, a doubleheader of Monday night football games, two on the same evening. A battle of unbeaten, Scott, in Tampa Bay between the Birds and the Buccaneers, and the Eagles emerge as the only undefeated side out of that football game. The first one up in Tampa. And Scott, the Bengals up off the mat. They get their first win of the year as Joe Burrow guts it out, the right calf strain that was re-aggravated 2 weeks ago against the Baltimore Ravens. He gives it a go. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't the best offensive game you'll ever see out of Joey B and the Bengals, but since he gets their first win of the year, Scott, one they desperately needed in the Super Bowl 56 rematch against the LA Rams.
Yeah, they really did. Boy, how bad was that offensive line for the LA Rams, though? I actually felt bad for Matthew Stafford. That poor guy was getting killed. Man, but at least the Bengals got the win. And the first game, Ben, am I the only one that found it curious why Tampa Bay, with two timeouts, down only two scores, wasn't called any timeouts? Could it be that this was the first game of the two games and someone got down to Tampa sidelines and said, you're not winning, so don't call any timeouts. We're flipping everybody over to the second game? I don't know, a little conspiracy, but I thought that was a little strange. Not going to win, but right, generally down two scores, you're calling timeouts to force them to, you know, kick a field goal, maybe miss, and you get the ball back. Who knows?
Yeah. Could be Todd Bowles, and the fact I don't think he's a very good head football coach, but that's
that just, could be it too.
Yeah, very, very much so. So, Scott, let's start with that first game, and then we'll get to Cincinnati and Los Angeles as we welcome in our Sirius XM audience here. Sirius XM channel 159, 159 on Sirius XM is the home for Sports Grid Radio. He's Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. This is Football Full Circle, recapping the final two games of week number 3, a Monday Night Football doubleheader. Scott, I said this yesterday on the show. You weren't here for the pregame, but now the postgame coverage of it. I felt the Eagles were better than just a 4.5-point favorite, albeit on the road in Tampa against, at the time, a perfect 2-0 Buccaneers team. The Bucs two wins over winless Minnesota, winless Chicago, who is an unmitigated disaster, and not taking anything away from Baker Mayfield or the Buccaneers to start this year. I just thought the Birds were better than that 4.5-point spread would say. The line closed at 5.5 in favor of Philadelphia. They win by 2 touchdowns, 25-11. And Scott, if there were some knocks against Philly after their opening 2 victories of the year, in which they were 1-0-1 against the spread, it's that the offense wasn't fully there just yet. Jalen Hurts hadn't thrown for 200 yards just yet in the opening 2 games. They wanted to see the aerial attack out of the Eagles. Well, that was on display on Monday night in Tampa Bay. 277 yards for Hurts, 2 interceptions, but did throw a touchdown pass. And Scott, despite the fact that his team ran the ball 48 times for nearly 260 yards week number 2 on that Thursday night against Minnesota, A.J. Brown was not too pleased with his lack of production in the offense. You knew they were going to be feeding him the football. 14 targets, 9 grabs, 131 yards for A.J. Brown as that Eagles offense got going, and the defense fully healthy, Scott, after 11 days off between their Thursday night game week 2 against the Vikes to week 3 here and a Monday night finale in Tampa Bay, only allowing 187 total yards and just 11 points to the Buccaneers. A complete effort, Scott, I thought, for Philadelphia last night.
Yeah, it really was. You know, and there were 2 props last night in this game that I thought. The A.J. Brown, these guys are so predictable, Ben. If you get a guy, I did this with Buffalo, with Stephon Diggs, the first game. I knew they were going to come out throwing because of all the bitching and moaning he did in the offseason. You get a guy, you know, Ty Hill talking about going for 2,000 yards, that speaks out. If the head coach is smart, he's going to appease his superstar player, and that's what they did last night with A.J. Brown, 9 for 131, as you mentioned. And then the other one I thought was pretty easy was the DeAndre Swift. I don't know what happened in game 1 where he only got the ball 1 time, but he got it 25 plus times against Minnesota, ran for nearly 200 yards, and his over under last night was only 9.5 for carries and 41.5 for yards rushing. It's like, how is he not getting that? That was just like completely out of whack. But I think the biggest thing, I agree with you, the 4.5, it bumped up to 6. I know that in one place, you know, before the game began, so there was a lot of late money on Philadelphia. I think even more so than the offense, though, Ben, I think it was the defense that people were a little like shaking their head about with this Philadelphia team. Gave up 20 points to, you know, really an offensive challenge, I'll say, Patriot team. Gave up 28 last week against Minnesota, had to hang on for dear life. They nearly blew a 3-score lead. So I think maybe that, maybe even more than the offense, had people wondering about this Eagles team. But we saw this high-hyped Eagles defense last night for sure.
Yeah, for sure, Scott. And they were injured and banged up in that week number 2 game against Minnesota. Reed Blankenship, who was the team's leading tackler last night, wasn't out there against Minnesota's passing attack that's throwing the football nearly 77% of their plays. Neither was James Bradbury, the corner opposite Darius Slay. Kirk Cousins threw for over 360 yards and threw the football 44 times. So, yeah, there were some questions certainly about this Bird secondary. Not the case last night. Fully healthy once again. And Scott, the Eagles have been booked as a favorite now, dating back to the start of last season in 2022. In 22 of their 23 games, the only game they were an underdog was Super Bowl 57 against the Chiefs. They are 19-3 straight up in that span, booked as a favorite, expected to win the game. They do. They are 12-9-1 against the number. Scott, I do want to ask you about the top of the NFC. There are 2 remaining unbeaten teams in the NFC after week number 3. Only one left in the AFC, that's the Miami Dolphins. But the 2 unbeaten teams in the NFC, Scott, the Niners, who are booked as the favorites at plus 260, the Eagles, the preseason favorites, and the defending, of course, conference champs at 3-1. Only a 40-cent gap, Scott, between those 2 teams. Do you feel strongly that one should be the favorite to win the NFC at this moment after week 3 more so than the other?
Not really, but I'm a big believer in if you're the champ, then you deserve to be until you get knocked off. Yep. So I'd have to say Philadelphia deserves it. You look at their next 3 weeks, Washington, Rams, Jets, you know, although they did lose to Washington last year one time at home, no less. But they should be 6-0 heading into what, you know, setting out to be a great game against the Miami Dolphins. So I'll listen. They didn't get the full 49er team last year. We all know that with Purdy going out. But Philadelphia won. So that's the bottom line. So I would give them the edge. But, boy, you look at that Niner team. If it ends up being Philadelphia and San Fran, and I really believe it will, although I have hopes with the Saints, that's going to be a terrific game. And they face each other in December in Philadelphia as well. So a little precursor to what we might get in the postseason.
Yeah, with some bad blood perhaps between the two sides. A lot of conversation following last year's NFC title game because of the injury to Brock Purdy and what would have happened if San Francisco was fully healthy, so on and so forth. I think, Scott, although San Francisco has looked wildly impressive to start this year, I would still back the Birds as the favorites right now. Again, only a 40-cent gap with two of the unbeaten teams remaining in the National Football League at a perfect 3-0, but I think I'd have Philly slightly ahead of San Francisco. But that's really not the question we have at this moment. We'll look at the other side of things, Scott, from the second of two games on a Monday night. Cincinnati gets its first win. That's next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. All right, Scott, it finally happened for Cincinnati after starting 0-2, realizing you can't start 0-3 if you have high hopes of making the postseason. Joe Burrow went out there with a strained right calf that was aggravated the week prior against Baltimore. The line moved from 1.5 to 3 in favor of Cincinnati. It was a slow start offensively. It was never perfect offensively last night by any means for the Bengals, but they get a big win, Scott, 19-16 to get their first win of the season and avoid an 0-3 start, which would probably spell disaster for their hopes of being a true AFC championship contender. A big win for the Bengals, Scott, as a push comes through on that point spread as the Bengals win 19-16.
Yeah, that late touchdown by the Rams, the old backdoor, not cover, but the old backdoor push there.
Correct.
Like you said at the top, the thing I took out of this was that bad offensive line for the LA Rams. Stafford just getting killed, sacked 6 times, hit probably a half a dozen more. Burrow definitely limited, right? I mean, they couldn't run the ball, Mixon only 65 yards on 19 carries. So this clearly was on Burrow. It was the Jamar Chase show, you know, 12 receptions for 141 yards, kind of his breakout game this year. First two games a little low. Nothing that I'd be thrilled with if I was a Bengals fan, but you had to win this game. You just had to win this game. And I'm guessing if Burrow was 100%, they would have won even more handily than the 3 points that they ended up winning by. But you know, their schedule is pretty light over the next 2-3 weeks as well, so they could turn this thing around. But a must win. It wasn't pretty. You take it, and then you kind of move on.
Yeah, absolutely so. And that's where the Bengals are, Scott, because we share the facts, right? When you start 0-3, we had seen that 99 times since the 2000 season in the National Football League. 99 teams start 0-3. Only one of the 99 ended up seeing the playoffs, the 2018 Texans. And Joe Burrow spoke to that, Scott, after the game, knowing it was a must-win game as much as a Week 3 game can be must-win, saying the fear of losing was greater than the fear of potentially re-injuring that calf. And Scott, he was asked to do a lot last night. Threw the football 49 times against that Rams defense. Again, it wasn't super pretty. 26 of 49, 259 yards, no touchdowns and interception. Did go over his passing yards prop that closed in the low 230s, which was big for Joe Burrow, who had stayed under that number in each of the first two games. Only 82 week number one, of course, against Cleveland, 222 week number two against the Baltimore Ravens. And Scott, like we saw with A.J. Brown, Jamar Chase was a focal point for Cincinnati offensively against L.A. 12 grabs on 15 targets, used everywhere across the field for 141 receiving yards. They made a point, Scott, of getting Jamar Chase the football in many different avenues last night, a big reason the Bengals started to find that success in the second half offensively.
Yeah, and that and T. Higgins was dropping every single pass that came his way. My, how many balls did he drop? Oh, I'd check his bank account this morning. I mean, right in his arms, and he's a really good wide receiver, too. So, like I said, it wasn't great. And Rams had a chance to win this game. I mean, it's more or less Cincinnati celebrating and more Rams kicking themselves because they were leading for a good portion of this game. They had great field position a number of times. An interception by Stafford killed them one time. Then another pick, hurt him another. You know, it was there for the taking for the Rams to go in there and get a win and come out of there 2-1 and say, okay, we got something going this year. You know, my one pet peeve with this game last night, Ben, was Puka Nacua, right? This guy only had 5 receptions last night. And more importantly, was only targeted 7 times. Now, he's been the story for the Rams and maybe even the NFL. A guy out of nowhere, BYU, 5th-round draft choice. 15 receptions last week, 10 the week before, and more importantly, 35 targets over the first 2 games, right? He's only targeted 7 times last night. I don't know where the network executives are and where the announcers are, where, you know, we're all hoping to get his over 6.5, at least I was. What was he doing? What wasn't he doing? You know, what were the Bengals doing that prevented him from getting, you know, the 10 to 15 carries and the targets were way down? Like I said, 35 targets in 2 games. That's amazing. And yet he wasn't targeted at all, basically, last night. Why not? You know, show the pattern. Show him being double covered or triple covered or whatever the case was last night. I mean, I don't know how you go from 35 targets over 2 games to only 7 last night.
Yeah, I heard a little bit of it on the broadcast from Dan Orlovsky and Lewis Riddick saying the Bengals were more physical with him off the point of release, off the line of scrimmage, not making it easy for him to get into his routes. Those free releases that I guess the 2 previous teams, the Niners and the Seahawks, did not really do. They didn't show it necessarily at times, but they certainly detailed what was happening. But Scott, you're right. It was a prolific start, a historic start, in fact, to Puka Nacua's start in his National Football League career. The only player in the history of the NFL now to have 10 or more grabs, 100 or more receiving yards in each of his first 2 games, and he had the most receptions, 25 we've ever seen for a newcomer in the National Football League in his first 2 career games. It was that 37-yard strike from Stafford to Nacua in the final 2 minutes, Scott, that allowed Puka to go over his receiving yards prop of 70.5, finishing with 72. But yes, not nearly as many targets. And Scott, I thought the discounted numbers were there on Puka Nacua, much in the way they were on Cooper Kupp back in the Super Bowl season for the LA Rams. Not comparing Nacua to Kupp at this point, but in terms of game plan and Stafford's relationship and connection with that wideout. Scott, they would set numbers on Cooper Kupp in the mid-80s, high 80s, low 90s by the time we got deeper into the 2021 NFL season. And they just weren't enough because Stafford was getting him the football 13, 15 times per game, looking his way in whatever the route tree and progressions look like. And that seemed to be the case for Nacua the first 2 weeks. 35 targets in his first 2 NFL career games. Last night, only 7. And on top of that, Scott, it was really a dismal effort by LA on 3rd down, 1 for 11. On 3rd down conversions last night. The only first down they picked up on 3rd down was on that final drive that led to the touchdown that led to a push. Sean McVay is known as many things, Scott, in the National Football League. One of the best young coaches there is, has that Super Bowl pedigree, of course. Now might be known through coming through the back door for a couple of pushes the last couple of weeks. Last week against the 49ers, that late field goal when the game was already decided to push as a 7-point underdog, and of course yesterday that touchdown late to push as a 3-point dog in Cincy as well.
Yeah. By the way, you know, Washington, the Commanders, kicked a field goal in the final minute down 37-0. It had nothing to do with the point spread or total or anything. I didn't hear anyone complaining about that or saying, boy, that's kind of strange. You know, we all heard it 2 weeks ago when it was involved with the Rams and the point spread. But when another team does it seemingly out of the blue for no particular reason, you don't hear anything about that. But yeah, you know, and I generally, you know, appreciate, the Rams and the way they do things. They get the ball to their star players. That's why I just thought it was weird last night. You know, they were more concerned with getting it to Atwell than they were to Nacua, which is fine. But like I said, from a viewer standpoint, you know, what are they doing then? Just show me how they're keeping him at the line of scrimmage. Show me how they're double or triple teaming him so we get an idea, because the whole pregame was built up on how this guy's a superstar and this and that, and it's a great story as it is, but you just can't let it sit there if he's not getting the reception. That's a story in itself as well. What did the Bengals do that the other two teams didn't do that is preventing Nacua from getting even targets, let alone receptions?
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. It would have been nice to see that. But one thing the Bengals did really well, Scott, was contributing all types of pressures on Matthew Stafford last night, sacking him six times. And Lou Anarumo dialed it up in that second half against a patchworked offensive line for L.A. Trey Hendrickson was a game breaker in the third and fourth quarters to make everything the Rams were trying to do offensively all that much more difficult. Having to get the ball out almost immediately probably contributed to the lack of Puka Nacua targets as well. The Bengals up off the mat. What does it mean for their overall outlook, notching their first win of the year? We'll break it down next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. It's Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. So, Scott, the Bengals got their first win of the year last night with a Joe Burrow-led offense that's not perfect just yet, but a Bengals defense that really led the way. 19-16, the win for Cincinnati. Scott, it was a game they must have had, and they got it. So now where do you consider Cincinnati in the grand scheme of a true contender, Scott, for a conference championship? Because at the end of week three, Scott, just three remaining undefeated teams left in all of the National Football League out of the 32 organizations. Two in the NFC, the Niners and the Eagles. We talked NFC title odds earlier on in the show. One lone unbeaten side, Scott, in the AFC. It's the Miami Dolphins, who have now moved up to the third best price in the AFC championship market, plus 550. The Chiefs and the Bills, both 2-1, two consecutive victories after dropping each of their two openers. KC plus 310, the favorite, nearly $2 in front of Buffalo at 5-1. The Ravens have the fourth best number at plus 650, and there is Cincinnati back in the top five, plus 850. Scott, do you consider the Bengals a true conference championship contender where they stand after last night?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Listen, the key to all that is that one of those 3-0 teams is not in the AFC North. Now, the Bengals are behind the eight ball, you know, because they lost to both Baltimore and Cleveland, right, you know, which adds a little to their being one game back. But ultimately, they are still just one game back, right? And you look at their next three games before they get their bye, at Tennessee, at Arizona, Seattle at home. You know, as long as Burrow's healthy, they'll probably be favored in all those games and really should win all, albeit two on the road, right? So they could be 4-3 heading into a bye before they get back-to-back monsters against San Fran and Buffalo. So, listen, it didn't start pretty, obviously, with them.
Right.
But they have a schedule and a team that's good enough to turn things around. And they're one of the few teams that I wouldn't necessarily, you know, worry about them not having home field advantage. They've shown in the postseason already they can win on the road, you know, beating Buffalo on the road. So it'd be nice to get, obviously, and you don't want to really be a wild card because of all the other teams that you'd have to face versus winning a division and maybe getting a bye. But I still think they're head and shoulders, them and the Dolphins and the Chiefs. Although, you know, I don't want to put Kansas City in here. I just don't think they're going to be that good despite what we've seen so far. So I'll say Miami and Cincinnati. I think those are the top two teams, Buffalo, Kansas City, maybe Baltimore once they get healthy on the next tier.
Listen, it's not a recipe or track record of success, and I think Cincinnati themselves would say we never want to start 0-2. We want to start 2-0, and if not, 1-1 at bare minimum. But last year, the Bengals started 0-2. And they were a touchdown or greater favorite against the Steelers week number one and in Dallas without Dak Prescott for the Cowboys week number two. They lost both of those games outright, and they got all the way back to the AFC Championship game. They won week number three on the road in MetLife against the Jets, 27-12. They won the following week against the Miami Dolphins. Then they lost against Baltimore in Baltimore by only two on a late Justin Tucker field goal. They were 2-3 at a point, Scott, to the first 5 weeks of the NFL season in 2022. Cincinnati still won 12 of their last final games. Starting in the month of November, they would never lose again in the regular season and made it all the way back to the AFC Championship game. So, again, Scott, not exactly how you draw it up to start off a year by any means, having your backs against the wall week number three and eking out your first victory at home against the Rams team that was not expected to do all that much, that I think is a little bit more competitive than people gave them credit for to start this season. But still, Scott, if there is a panic meter in the Bengals locker room right now, I think it's probably slim as compared to other teams that might be off to disappointing starts, because at least they can rely on last year. I do believe the Bengals will be right there at the end of this season. And Scott, frankly, if you want a little value, Cincy's win total before the year was 10.5. Now it's 9.5, and the under has hefty juice. It was minus 188 earlier today. Now minus 162. The over of 9.5 is still plus 128. If you think the Bengals are going to be a postseason contender, as we've said all along, Scott, maybe the AFC hasn't been as strong to start this year, but you would still think at least 10 wins to be a playoff team in the AFC. You've got some plus money now to do that for the Bengals.
Yeah, that's not bad, you know. And their schedule is no more difficult or easy. It's you know, listen, you got a couple of monsters on there. You're playing at Kansas City. You're playing at San Fran. Buffalo's on there. But then you got a couple of, you know, supposed cupcakes with Houston and Indianapolis. And who knows what Minnesota's going to be like in the middle of December. At this point, they could be out of it. So it's a schedule that's doable, I would say. And yeah, like I said, that number 9.5, you get it now. They win these next three games, which I think they're going to do, and be 4-3 heading into the bye, that number I think will be a little bit higher. A little tougher for these numbers to adjust as the season goes on because there's so few games when you're supposed to win 10. But I think that's a halfway decent number right now.
For sure. And again, they're 1-2. Are they going to rattle off 12 of their final 14 like they did a year ago after starting 0-2? Maybe not, but can they get to a certain point? I think so. So I like the number at over 9.5 with some plus money for a team that was expected to win 11 games and was the two-time defending AFC North Divisional champs, who, of course, had the third best price to win the AFC. So, Scott, let's start with the AFC North a little bit here as well. I have told you, I thought it was going to be the most competitive division in football entering this year, not the AFC East. Of course, the AFC East looks a little different now than what we forecasted it to look like with Aaron Rodgers at the helm in New York, knowing it is Zach Wilson, at least for the time being. But in the AFC North, Scott, you have three teams at 2-1, excuse me, the Ravens, the Browns, and the Steelers, and you have the Bengals at 1-2. Scott, you look at the odds in the AFC North, the Ravens are the favorites right now at +165. The Steelers have the longest price of the four teams in that division, +370. Scott, all four teams are separated by just about $2, meaning the odds makers see it as it's rather up in the air following 3 weeks of this NFL season.
Well, it really is, right? I mean, even the Browns, Ben. You know the Browns, you want a quirky little stat? The Browns have not allowed a team to drive into their red zone in three games. Team last week, Houston recovered a fumble in Cleveland, so they ran a play. That was the first time a team has run a play in Cleveland's red zone, and that was, again, a gift. That no team has driven into the inside the Cleveland 20-yard line for those that with the red zone. That in three games in the NFL, that's amazing. So this team, the Browns look like they're not going to be a pushover. That's going to be a force maybe all season long, and you think maybe Watson's only going to get better, right? You would think so. That is going to be a tough division. You're not getting great value on whichever one you choose, because all four could realistically win, so they're not going to make all like 4-1, even though it's as far as the difficulty goes, it's difficult to say who's going to come out of the pack. I still think it's going to be Cincinnati, but you look at these teams, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if any of these teams, I thought Pittsburgh was a dark horse going into this year, and they're proving me right so far. So that might be the toughest division to pick, because all four can win, but you're not getting the monster odds like you should be, knowing that there's four possibilities. Most other divisions have two, right? Miami, Buffalo at this point in the East, you know, and you know, Jacksonville and Tennessee in the South, Kansas City and the Chargers in the West. There's generally two. AFC North really has four.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that's going to be the case. Again, Pittsburgh's not going anywhere. Cleveland is better than I thought, Scott. They've given up six total points in their two games at home. And there will be a big test for the Browns on this upcoming Sunday in that early window, taking on the Baltimore Ravens. It's Cleveland booked as a 2.5-point favorite with a low over-under right now at 40 and a hook. But that Browns defense has been ferocious, certainly at home this year. The best scoring defense in the NFL so far through 3 weeks, only allowing 10.7 points per game. With the injury, Scott, already mounting up for Baltimore, might be a tough test for the flock. But they are all going to be in the mix, I think, throughout the end of this regular season. And, of course, there's still 15 more regular season weeks and 14 more games for each and every club. Scott, your Miami Dolphins, the lone undefeated team left in the AFC after making history on Sunday, the fourth team ever in the NFL to score 70 or more points, the first since Washington in 1966. Scott, what has Miami shown to you so far this season?
Boy, they could do it all, right? I mean, you have two teams now that you have to worry about realistically with their quarterback. I think the Burrow thing is going to be a lingering. You know, he injured that, you know, calf in August, beginning of August, and here we are late September, and it's still going to bother them. So since he's going to have to worry about him more than any other quarterback, and then Miami, obviously, with Tua, you have to worry about him. So that is it. I mean, this team has been able to run the ball. They've been able to throw the ball, obviously. Defensively, you know, whenever they've needed a big stand over these first three games, the defense has come up big.
Yeah.
Boy, you know, outside of maybe a field goal kicker or, you know, or a punter, I mean, the special teams have been okay as well. I mean, they've shown me, you know, my only fear is that they just kind of peaked a little bit too soon. You know, 70 points, you know, couldn't they like stopped at like 35 or 40? You put up 70 one week, it's tough to kind of score the following week. You see that in blowouts all the time in the NBA. Team wins by 50, and then the next time out, they score 85 points and they lose. So, yeah. But I'm still surprised, Ben, that you could get them at 10-1. At least it was yesterday when I checked, and I'll check it here real quickly, that you could still get them at 10-1 to win the Super Bowl. I don't think they're yet 10-1 still on FanDuel. I don't think they're the sixth choice as they have them listed right now.
Yeah. Scott, listen, I was more optimistic about the Dolphins than I think others, maybe not Dolphins fans, but obviously a lot was contingent on the health of Tua Tagovailoa. That offense was not my question for the Fins. It was defensively, and they've looked good so far. I think only improving under Vic Fangio, and Jalen Ramsey hasn't even played yet for Miami. I think the sky's the limit for this Dolphins team. We'll look at the early lines and a marquee matchup for the Dolphins, week number four, next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle. Here we go. Week number four, Scott, of the NFL season is on the horizon. Of course, just 2 days off. An NFC North rivalry to start off on Thursday Night Football in Lambeau. It's the Packers and the Lions, meeting for the first time since Detroit ended Aaron Rodgers' Green Bay career, keeping the Pack out of the postseason with a huge upset victory in that regular season finale in 2022. But Scott, before we look at that game and maybe some others as the early approach to this week four slate begins, let's start with the Miami Dolphins, a marquee matchup, the marquee matchup in my estimation for week number four, and that Sunday slate. Miami on the road in Buffalo, taking on the Bills. Buffalo booked as a 2.5-point home favorite, Scott. It's the only total north of 50 this weekend. 53 and a hook is the over-under between the Bills and the Fins.
Yeah, you know, interesting that it's 53.5, Ben. Let me start there. Just because there's been five games now this year and last year that have been posted at 54 or over, and it's 5-0 under for the actual game. So is it coincidence that this would be 53.5, or the boys in Vegas, you know, not trying to jinx it or know that if it's at 54, everyone's betting the under? I don't know. When's the last time? Now, Buffalo's up to 3 on FanDuel, but when's the last time with the Miami plus 3 with little juice? But, you know, I'm trying to figure the last time the Dolphins have been a 2.5, 3-point road underdog at Buffalo. It's been a little while. It's been a long time. At home, maybe, but not on the road. So, you know, they're almost asking for you know, Buffalo money here, even though it did tick up just a little bit. But this should be a great game. Like I said, my only fear from a Dolphins standpoint is how many points they scored. It was just so easy. You know what? I'll take my chances. I guess I'd rather have that than them coming off a loss. So Buffalo, only though a 3-point favorite, 2.5-point favorite at home against the Dolphins. Maybe a changing of the guard in the AFC East on the line in this contest.
And it really could be, Scott, outside of one significant Sunday, because all of them are, each and every week, all 18 on the regular season in the National Football League. But Buffalo has bounced back from its opening season loss, a divisional game on the road in MetLife. But, Scott, that was a divisional loss against the New York Jets and Zach Wilson. That could prove very costly when the year comes to a close. Entering the game, if you would have said Buffalo lost their season opener against Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets, even though they were a 2.5-point favorite, it would have been like, okay, understandable. Opening game, atmosphere, on the road, Aaron's debut in New York, things are understandable there. Not to lose to Zach Wilson in the atmosphere that he played with, how porous the Bills' offense was that day, turning the football over 4 different times. But Scott, because of that loss, it's already 0-1 in division for Buffalo. They've responded well, 38-10, the victory over Las Vegas, week number 2, hammering the Commanders 37-3 on the road in Washington this past weekend. They have covered as an 8.5-point favorite and a 6.5-point favorite in those two games, respectively. They look like the team we expected to see each of the past 2 weeks, but this is their toughest competition of the year. Scott, I think you're spot on. Really indicative of the times in the AFC East to see the Fins as less than a field goal favorite, even around that key number of 3. That would say to me, Scott, on a neutral floor, on a neutral surface, Miami actually might be shaded as the slightly better team. In Miami, Scott, is minus 135 right now to win the AFC East, the divisional frontrunners, and an odds on favorite. Not only could Miami start off the year, Scott, a perfect 4-0, making a statement in Buffalo, that's a narrative perspective. This could benefit the Dolphins tremendously en route to winning a division and, of course, hosting at least one playoff game come January.
Yeah, this has actually been a 2.5 game swing, believe it or not. Dolphins win, they go to 4-0. Buffalo falls to 2-2. So Dolphins have a 2-game lead and the head-to-head tiebreaker, which we'll give a half a game for right now. So they'd have a 2.5, in essence, game lead. Dolphins lose, they fall to 3-1. Buffalo improves to 3-1, and Buffalo would have the head-to-head tiebreaker. So it's really a 3-game swing built into one game. That's how big this contest is, even though it's only week 4. I mean, are the Dolphins really not a stranglehold by any stretch after only 4 games? But to be able to have that kind of a monster lead, that would be huge. That alone is a step, right? It's not only the game facing Buffalo, beating Buffalo, but just knowing you got a chance to really take a stranglehold in this division this early in the season. Yeah. I hope it happens as a Dolphin fan, but I kind of have my doubts. You know, it's almost too good to be true. So,
right,
figure a Buffalo 20-point win.
Certainly so, Scott. And I think you're spot on there, right? I don't think this game is going to be a statement really by either side. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be fantastic. The odds certainly say so. A 2.5-point spread, a total of 53.5. We're talking something in the ballpark of a 28-24 game coming down to the wire. That's where the odds would stack up for this one by the numbers. And that would be sensational television early in that Sunday slate. But Scott, I think if there is a statement made, made by other side, the ramifications we're going to see from the futures forecast in the odds, the division, the conference, yeah, the Super Bowl market is going to be drastic. For instance, let's say Miami goes on the road and just wins this football game outright. That would be a big statement made by the Dolphins. Not only would their price to win the division probably be closer to minus money and $2 worth, but also, Scott, you would have to think where the Bills are right now, 5-1, the second best price behind Kansas City in the AFC title. With the Dolphins 50 cents back of Buffalo at the moment, those prices flip-flop. Miami's probably super close to Kansas City, and depending on what the stats look like in the box score, Scott, that MVP number on Tua Tagovailoa, already booked as the favorite so far at plus 350, would also probably grow to the shortest we have seen it so far this season.
Yeah, and it is, it's a good point because it is prime for a major move, right? And I say that only because right now the odds don't make any sense. So that they have to make sense. And what I say by they don't make any sense is Dolphins are actually the favorite, as you pointed out earlier, to win the division at minus 135, Buffalo plus 145. That's a pretty good swing. But the Bills are favored over the Dolphins to win the AFC, and they're favored over the Dolphins to win the Super Bowl. So why would they be not favored then to win the division? So that's why I mean that this is, there's some shaking out to do with the AFC, and I agree. You know, Dolphins go up to Buffalo, they grab that 2.5 game lead, as I mentioned, they would drop quite a bit. They would have to be the second choice in the AFC. I don't know if they'll overtake Kansas City, and they certainly would be ahead of Buffalo, I would think, as far as the Super Bowl, maybe moving to the fourth choice, or maybe moving closer to Philadelphia, depending on what the Eagles do.
Yeah, I would agree, depending on where things fall for Miami. Scott, when you look around the National Football League, like we have said, only three remaining unbeaten teams: the Dolphins, the Eagles, and the 49ers. Miami, by far, the toughest test here. Yeah, now, as you said, Scott, up to a full field goal favorite, getting three on the road in Buffalo to try to remain unbeaten. The Eagles are an 8.5-point favorite at home against Washington, minus 390 on the money line. The odds would say the Birds start a perfect 4-0, and San Francisco, Scott, has the easiest perceptible test on Sunday afternoon, a 14-point favorite at home against the Arizona Cardinals, who, Scott, are a 3-0 football team against the number, booked as an underdog in all three of their games this year. Scott, there are not many 3-0 teams ATS in the NFL either. Miami being one, Arizona the other, and Green Bay. But Arizona, 3-0 against the spread, booked in all three games as an underdog, Scott. A true testament to a more competitive Cardinals side than I thought we would see at all this season for Arizona.
Yeah, and even Green Bay, it would be when you got the bet in. Naturally, I got Green Bay laying 1.5 this weekend. One of the rare times that 1.5 team wins but doesn't cover the spread.
Yeah.
The analytics, going for the two after that first touchdown. Don't know if you watched the game, but that's one time it actually panned out for Green Bay. But, tell Dallas Cowboy fans about how it should be so easy for San Francisco this week, right?
For sure.
I mean, it probably will. But that Arizona team, I tell you, Ben, they're not a bad team. You know, I don't know if we were wrong about them, but, you know, they got a big-time running back in James Conner. You know, they got Zach Ertz. The defense has played very well. You know, Joshua Dobbs is in the NFL for a few years now, so he's shown a little bit of ability. They had a chance to win against Washington. You know, they had a 3-score third quarter lead against the Giants, so I'm not talking about making the playoffs or even 500, but they might not be the complete pushover that we thought they would be. So San Fran should win this week, don't get me wrong, but you know, really when you think about it, the bottom feeders, right? Who do you think were the worst teams in the NFL this coming? Arizona? Not bad, right? Houston, the C.J. Stroud has really shown that they might have something in him. 1-2, not bad. Even the Indianapolis Colts, we thought were going to be a joke, and there they are sitting in first place in the AFC South. So to me, the three worst teams we thought were going to be, those three, and they're actually turning out to be halfway decent.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that's the interesting thing, Scott. I thought Arizona was going to be rolled over, right? Because you mentioned some of the talent there, and you're not wrong, but they had just brought Josh Dobbs off the street. Literally, he was a free agent with very little knowledge of this organization, team, coaching staff. As he started week number one for the Cardinals, and they released Colt McCoy, who I thought would be the veteran presence at bare minimum to kind of fill those gaps and holes until Kyler Murray maybe came back at some point this year. They got rid of him. Josh Dobbs had to learn the guy's names and carry around a clipboard as he was getting ready for week number one for Arizona in that matchup against Washington. They were getting a touchdown against the Commanders, who, although started a perfect 2-0, I don't think necessarily, Scott, are going to be a 9 or 10 win football team. And a touchdown in NFL games is a very lofty number. The Cardinals have proven me wrong. They are not the worst team in the National Football League. That's the Chicago Bears by a pretty good margin. And anybody that argues otherwise, I think, needs to see things a little bit differently. But the Cardinals have been feisty. The Cardinals have been competitive. Do I think they knock off the Niners and pull off their second double-digit upset of the year? No. Do I think they can keep this one within two touchdowns? Maybe, if they can score some points against San Francisco, but they scored some points against Dallas, Scott. A Cowboys defense that I thought was going to be pretty unrelenting in this matchup against Arizona a weekend ago, and it was big play after big play. Josh Dobbs had a 40-plus yard run. Rondale Moore had a 45-yard run for a touchdown. A couple of big plays, including the late one to Michael Floyd that iced it away for Arizona, scoring that final touchdown to put them up by two scores. So I think there's a little bit more fight in this Cardinals team, Scott, than anybody really anticipated to begin.
Yeah, they only gave up 20 points to the Commanders, and one was a gift touchdown on a turnover. Giants really didn't turn it on until the third quarter. So for a half, they had shut them out. And then they played, you know, like you said, pretty well against that Cowboys offense, that the Arizona defense. So, you know, like you said, they're not going to win a ton of games. And it's still 4.5 on FanDuel. If you bet the under, you can get some juice on them. You know, ultimately, will they get to 5-12? You know, I don't know. But like you said, I don't think – when everything is said and done, you watch, they'll be one of the best against the spread teams in the NFL. I don't know what it would take for those numbers to come down. Like I said, 14-point underdog this week. They got the Bengals the next week at home. They'll probably be at least a touchdown underdog then. They're going to be a touchdown underdog in probably every game.
For sure. But Scott, you're right. A lot of times we see teams that aren't predicted to do all that much. The Lions in 2021, the Texans the last few years, that when you booked them as a big underdog, they just happen to stay in games and cover more. They could still lose by 10 points, Scott, in San Francisco or Santa Clara on Sunday and still cover the number. Some quarterback news out of New York. That's next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on FFC for just a few more minutes. Scott, the New York Jets have made their quarterback move, trying to add to see if somebody might be able to beat out Zach Wilson for that starting quarterback job. The Jets, pending a physical, have signed Trevor Siemian. The savior in New York, Scott, Trevor Siemian steps in to the quarterback room for Gangrene.
Oh, man, what is that? You know, I guess the words of Joe Namath just don't hold as much weight as they used to, because if you didn't see it yesterday, Namath, a local radio here, just ripped the Jets and Zach Wilson, saying he's had enough, he's no good, called for the head coach, the GM, to be fired. I mean, he just went off yesterday. So this is the Jets' response, bringing in Trevor Wilson. Not Carson Wentz, not maybe even Joe Flacco, who was with them last year, but Trevor Siemian. Wow, what is that going to do, right? I mean, what is that realistically going to do? Absolutely nothing. Appease the fans, appease Joe Namath. Wow, Jets are in trouble. Jets are in a lot of trouble. Zach Wilson is not clearly the answer, Ben. He's not.
You know, I do feel for Zach Wilson a little bit, Scott. He was thrust into this impossible situation, right? And there was maybe some hope that after 2 years of floundering at the quarterback position, certainly not being the face of the franchise in New York, that maybe he would learn under Aaron Rodgers, maybe in this spot with pressure off him and some goodwill built up, even from a Jets fan base that can be ruthless at times because they recognized, oh my God, we were going to win a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. That's probably not the case with Zach Wilson, but we'll run the football well, we'll play good defense, maybe we'll be halfway competitive. That goodwill has run out after two games, really, and things seem rather dismal for the New York Jets this year. It's got a ground game, by the way, that is atrocious in the two games that Zach Wilson has started. So, yeah, Joe Namath not happy. I don't think anybody's happy.
What's worse, Ben, real quickly?
Yeah.
Zach Wilson, Sam Darnold draft or Justin Fields, Mitch Trubisky draft for the Bears?
Oh, I guess the jury is still out in Chicago. At least I'll say that to myself, Scott. All right, that does it for FFC. We'll see you tomorrow at noon Eastern time.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Fall calls for comfort. Mack Weldon's got essentials designed for cool days and timeless style. Their new Ace line combines comfort with sophisticated looks. Go to MackWeldon.com for 20% off your first order of $125 or more with code MACK25.